CliffCentral.com.
Well, we are live, CliffCentral.com, on a Friday morning, and you can be part of the show. You can comment on YouTube live. You can also send us a text or an SMS or a WhatsApp on 0797-482-090. I tried to send an SMS for the first time ever in like a year or two. I mean, I never send. Who the hell sends those anymore, right? It's part of every cell phone package, but who the hell uses them? I tried to send it the other day, and mine doesn't work.
I received an SMS from some really brand promoting something, and I thought, this is bizarre. Do you understand what year we're in?
Yeah, but exactly.
Talking about advancements in technology, I just want to name and shame myself. You know, this office is quite fancy that we're in, and it is only this week, with me being predominantly alone, that I finally figured out how to work our blinds here.
So we've got these awesome tailored blinds. You know, they're the people who sponsor our history podcast, Blind History. And they came in and they installed these things. And I thought they were probably unnecessary because we used to have those ones, you know, like the Venetian blinds that you would use a string and you'd pull the string and it would go up and down. And then you twist that thing and then they'd kind of open up or down like this. Anyway, those were sufficient. And like none of us are particularly higher grade about these things. Anyway, Anthony and his team brought in these amazing blinds, but they're electric. So you actually press a button, electronic. You press a button and then they go up or down and you can stop them in the middle. And they're amazing. But Sears only just worked this out now, and they've probably been there for about 3 years.
40,000 years later. I get, you know, if it's not for work, I get very old school with technology and I get easily frustrated. There's one, it's one all powerful remote and it works for all of them, but it never works. I pointed at the blind that I once opened and then the one in the opposite room will open. So I'm like, what is going on? So I'm very proud of myself. I can now proudly open three of the blinds. There's still two that confuse the heck out of me, but it's very impressive.
I'll tell you who would be impressed with you is Jane, because she knows how to work those things. By the way, Sia sent a picture on our WhatsApp group for Cliff Central yesterday that he was watering the plants in the office. And I've got to credit you, Sia. You've been accused of killing plants before, but you're actually looking after all our little plants, which I think is really cool. I thought you were a murderer of plants. I believed all the propaganda. I did. I believed all of it. But now I'm willing to give you a second chance.
What hasn't Us Jane accused me of over the past few years? Who knows?
I'm not going to bring up the hideous charges that Jane has brought against in the past. All right, let's move on. We've got other things to talk about. There's quite a lot that we need to know this morning. And one of the people that I want you to know about is Sibs. He's somebody I met a little while ago, and he's doing pretty cool things online. He's creating some amazing content. And I had a meeting with him and with Greg the other day, and we thought we'd better introduce you to him. Sibs Qertu Yates, and he is an impressive guy. We're going to bring him on here. He's doing all kinds of good stuff on YouTube. He's got Sit Down with Sibs, where he interviews some of his well-known in not only the hottest restaurants around Johannesburg, but also in society, in you know, some celebrities and all kinds of interesting people. How are you doing, Sibs?
I'm good, thanks, yourself, guy.
Good, man. It looks like it's dark where you are. Is there load shedding, or you just not have your influencer light on at the moment?
No, I don't actually have a ring light yet. My Mac packed it up a couple weeks ago. So I'm now back on my 12th dial.
Oh no. Okay. So listen, tell us about your show, Sit Down with Sibs, because I've watched a couple of episodes. You've interviewed like these amazing people who run these brilliant restaurants around town. And it's pretty cool to see some of the places are opening up again after lockdown. There's life coming back into the world. You know, some interesting stuff is happening. And you obviously have been there to interview and to talk to these people long before this started happening, but it's a part of like what's going on around us at the moment. Do you want to update us on what's going on there?
Yeah, I'd best describe the Sit Down with Sibs as sort of being a Joe Rogan meets Top Billing. It's a very weird combination, but it was sort of a combination I realized sort of there's a bit of an appetite for. So where my journey started is actually during the hard lockdown. In that first 21 days, I was kind of, because I was working, doing my articles during the time. And we obviously had a lot of free time.
What did you study at university? And you were at UCT, right?
Yeah, I was at UCT. I studied politics and law.
Okay. Politics, what a waste of time.
Yeah, I realized that very quickly. So basically about 3 weeks into that lockdown, a good friend of mine, CK Lonzi, who's in the EFF, we decided why don't let's do a some form of podcast on our StreamYard, and we can talk about our experience at a Model C school, as Black students at Model C school. And we put this thing up on Facebook and Instagram, and it had about 3,500 viewers listening in live, and then it had up to 5,000 views. And I sat there thinking, people actually care about what I have to say. And there's certainly an appetite for some of the topics I engage with. So then I sort of started hosting Instagram Lives with Sivan Gyasi and a few other celebrities over the lockdown period. And again, it was sort of the same sort of reaction. There was an appetite for sort of what I was doing. And then towards probably at the end of last year, I started actually doing it properly. So we sit down with celebrities such as
So no, I mean, the show sounds really cool, and I advise people to go and check it out if they haven't already. But what's your background? Tell us a little bit about you mentioned this friend of yours from the EFF. Weren't you involved in student politics too?
Yeah, I was. I was in the student representative council at UCT. So I ran under that, the blue party. I left them a couple years ago. I think the reason why I left politics, we can go into it if you'd like, but it was more that, pardon?
No, I want to know why, because I think a lot of people are so disenchanted with politics at the moment that your reason might explain the way some of us feel.
Yeah, I think getting to sort of spend that much time with politicians and actually realizing how they tick and where their interests lie certainly sort of pushed me away from it. I think without trying to sort of sound too self-promotional, but I was there to sort of help. And I always got really quite frustrated when there were often campaigns I was starting, or some of the work that I was doing was always getting stopped by politics, by people wanting to advance their own agenda as opposed to actually being there trying to help the people. And noticing that on a student level and realizing, this is going to be my life.
People have this idealistic view that in politics they're going to be able to help everybody. Meanwhile, they can't even help themselves, and they see the kind of the kind of people who are in politics and who are actively engaged in politics, and it's always disappointing. I mean, I know there are few. There are some really good people in politics, right? You can count them on probably two hands, and they are public servants through and through. They're altruistic people. They're really not in it for fame or for money or for anything else, but they are such a tiny minority. And when you see all the other people, the shitheads who are in politics, it's just, it gives everybody a reason to run and hide.
Yeah. I mean, I'll never forget one of the things I was told by someone in the DA. She said to me that we need to stop hiring career politicians, and we need to start looking at politicians who would actually be successful in another field somewhere else. And I've sort of always had that in the back of my head, is that let me actually go on, let me go do something else. And then maybe one day, I'll go back into politics. But for the time being, that's not really something I want to be doing.
All right. So student politics, and then you started messing around with kind of creating content online. What's your big plan? I mean, where are we going to see you if everything works out in the next 5 years? What would you like to be doing?
I would like to be interviewing. The plan is that anyone who of substance that steps foot into Africa should be sitting down with me. That is the initial sort of short-term plan. And so far, so good. I mean, today I'm sitting down with the first international band that has been touring South Africa since the pandemic started. They're a Canadian band called Neon Dreams. And then even as soon as this year, I'm going to be moving over to go to London for a couple of weeks, and hopefully interviewing some people over there, and then eventually, in November, going over to LA.
Who would you really like to meet? Who's on your top three list of people, if I could get you anyone in the whole world to sit down and have a conversation with, who would you really like to interview? Three people. You've only got three.
So funny enough, there's someone you've already interviewed, Zubi. He's one. Zubi Music. I would say Jordan Peterson is also up there.
Okay.
And then, the last one would have to be a sportsman, probably like Michael Jordan or someone like that.
Yeah. Well, that's not, I mean, listen, I want to hear those interviews. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
What's the situation? Are you kind of in Joburg now? Whereabouts are you? And what's your day to day stuff? Because you obviously studied law and you're doing articles. That's no fun. You basically are a servant. You're a servant in a law firm if you're doing articles, right? That's a horrible thing to do. Just tell people how horrible that is.
So much to my parents' disappointment. I left my articles. I realized I did not want to be sitting behind a desk.
Welcome to the club of people who've disappointed their parents by dropping out of law. That's my club.
Yeah, and then I'm entering an industry at the time where it's probably most difficult to be in the entertainment industry. But I mean, so far there's been some good progress.
I'm going to tell you some uncomfortable truths here. First of all, we don't need any more lawyers. And second of all, we don't need any more entertainers. So you've chosen two of the shittiest career paths available to people. So you didn't even do articles, or you did and then you decided this was me?
Yeah, I stopped 6 months in. It was interesting.
Don't be diplomatic. It must have been horrible. So clerks and people who work in law firms doing their articles, what you guys do is basically you run to and from court, you file papers. It's the most dreary administrative stuff imaginable. And you have to draft stuff and then they throw it all out and they don't take you seriously. And they pay you no money, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you spend so much time in the master's office that you actually just like, you realize why these people are all so depressed. It actually starts getting you a little bit down. But my day to day is, at the moment, I'm in Cape Town because I'm filming with the band a bit later on today. And then I'll be back in Joburg next week and then recording out of our studio in Joburg. So it's going to be pretty much recording about 3 or 4 times a week. With content coming out twice a week.
Now, listen, you haven't really gone in the direction I thought you would. You haven't been boasting about all the things that you've done. I mean, you're the founder of a tech startup, which is pretty cool. And it's called GetVen.com.
Yeah.
And it's South Africa's first online marketplace dedicated to finding, booking, and paying for venues for events, meetings, and productions. That's amazingly clever. You guys have been you've been reported on in VentureBurn, among other things. You also worked in mining as a junior trader, and you actually worked in Switzerland.
Yes, yeah, that's what I did for my gap year.
How old are you, 48?
I'm 25 in a month's time. I was one of those kids that I wanted to either do everything, but I didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do. And I think like sort of growing up in the environment that I did, there was a lot of pressure to sort of, you had to go like the business science or you had to go the law route or the accounting route, whatever it was. And I was never that kid. So basically I decided I wanted to take a gap year, and what happened was my gap year going to the UK fell through. And then I was approached for this awesome job in Switzerland, where I worked as a junior trader trainee at a commodities trading house in Zug, which is about half an hour outside Zurich. I spent a year there. I loved the experience. I think Switzerland isn't for me. It's very vanilla, so to speak. Not much happens, and I needed a little bit more excitement into my life. But it was a really, really cool experience.
That's not all. You also have been the recipient of a Bronze and Silver President's Award in the Duke of Edinburgh Award Scheme. So, I mean, that's something that in England people boast about that right up front. You also were a student representative council member at the University of Cape Town. We spoke about that earlier. Former chairperson of the DA, a branch of the DA when you were still in it.
I was very, very, very actively involved. But, thank you. Thanks for the praise.
All right. No, well done, dude. Listen, it's always interesting to meet people who are doing things and making things happen. And I hope we get to hear more from you. So best of luck. Where can people find you?
So you can find me on my Sit Down with Sibs Instagram page. My content will be distributed as well on Clip Central as well as the Rogue Radio Network. And yeah, you can find me at my handle on Instagram is at SibsQI. And yeah, you can also find me on LinkedIn. I'm also quite active on there.
Hey, what's the best piece of advice you've been given? I mean, you're doing all these things and you're only 25 years old and you seem to be one of those people who really takes opportunities by the horns. What's the best advice you've been given by somebody that you can recall right now?
Just start, I would say. Just start.
Don't wait. So I think, Don't wait for conditions to be perfect. Just get going.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I think too many people are apprehensive to start. And they always look back with sort of regrets. And I don't really want to live my life with regret. And say, I should have done that. So I'd rather just go for it and sort of try to assemble the plan on the way down.
There we go. Good stuff, man. Nice to see you. Thanks, Sibs.
You too. Thanks, Eric.
All right, cool. Well, we'll put all the links up on cliffcentral.com and you can go and connect with Sibs and see what he's up to. I think he's a good guy to watch. There's interesting stuff happening there. And we like to introduce you to people who we meet through Cliff Central, who you might be interested in talking to yourself. Seems like a very cool guy. What are you
very cool.
At?
Well, no. I just, you know, I took him off the screen and then I put myself back on. I'm like, hey,
what you do look similar.
Squint and some people might just think with this.
No. There were some people who commented through the course of the interview with Sibs. It's like, hey, is this the backup plan for Sia if something goes wrong? So you better watch out, Sia. I mean, I wouldn't even, all I have to do is change two letters of his name and basically it's you.
It's so similar as well. I wouldn't even, look, he wouldn't even be the downgrade. He would be the upgrade. If you replaced me with him, I wouldn't even blame you.
Like, he's younger. Of course he is. Weren't you on you were like the junior mayor of Durban or something, weren't you?
Gareth, but I didn't go to Switzerland and do the what of the what when I was 12 years old. And he probably worked on CRISP DNA in his spare time when he was 7.
Definitely.
So I'd actually applaud you if I got an email later today that said,
see, we've decided to replace you. Yeah.
Yes, I'd go. I get it.
Secretly, that's the reason we had him on the show, is to introduce him to the audience so that they'll warm to him and forget about you.
You know, my paranoia will just start playing with me. I'm going to go home and just cry now. No, he's a very cool guy.
He does say, I mean, that's why I asked him about the best advice. He says something that I think I've always believed too, is like you can't wait for conditions to be perfect for anything to start. I know lots of people who they've wanted to have kids, for example. You know, these friends of mine who are in their 30s, and then they've waited because they thought, oh, we don't have enough money yet, or we're not living in the house that we want to live in when we raise kids, or we're not in the country that we want to raise kids in, or whatever. And they've waited and waited, and then by the time they're ready to have the kids, it's too late. Or things have become, you know, their situation's changed. I always think, like, how many of us have missed out on opportunities? And that's just one example. How many of us have let something slide, let a really big chance slip by? And it could be in health, it could be in relationships, it could be in money, it could be in adventure, it could be anything. And you've said no to something, and then, you know, 3-4 years later, you go, oh, I wish I'd just done that.
Yeah.
And you were waiting for conditions to be perfect, and they never are. Like, anyone who will tell you that they're ready to have a child, or ready to start a business, or ready to take a year off and explore the world. Anyone who tells you that they're only half sure. The brave ones do it anyway, regardless of how nervous they are about what might unfold and how it might go wrong. So there's a useful bit of Friday advice from Sibs. I think it's very cool to remember that. Okay. So in a little while, we'll talk to Phil and to George Meany. But before we get to any of that, Sia's got a couple of things on his agenda. There is apparently a piece of art. I suppose you could call it art. I think it's bullshit.
I don't want to call it art.
Yeah. There's an Italian artist who's just auctioned off an invisible sculpture for $18,300.
You know, no. I've seen this headline pop up over the past couple of days, and I've been ignoring it, thinking this cannot be true.
This and is one of the stupidest things. If the aliens do come, and you know, we've been talking about the aliens a little bit. If the aliens land on Earth and they hear about this story, they will switch on the engines and they will disappear back into outer space, and we will never hear from them again. They'll go, oh my God, there's no way we can save these people. They're ruined. So what did this guy do?
Silly. So his name, Italian artist. I'm going to butcher his name, but I'm trying here. His name is Salvatore Garau, and he titled his piece, in inverted commas, I Am, and it doesn't exist. It literally does not exist except in his imagination. So he further explains it by saying it doesn't physically exist, but it exists in a vacuum. He says the vacuum is nothing more than a space full of energy. And even if we empty it and there's nothing left, according to the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, that nothing, Heisenberg uncertainty principle, that nothing has a weight. Therefore, it has energy that is condensed and transformed into particles that is into us. What the hell did he just say there?
Yeah, that's some bullshit. You know what's happened here is that this shows you that if you don't have real problems in your life, you start to develop paranoia and you start to come up with absolute nonsense. And this is just a word salad that means nothing. And to bring in Heisenberg is that you understand science and you understand what that principle is. It's just like such a cop out, because really what you're selling is nothing. You're selling nothing. I don't think he's the idiot, by the way. I think he's just a really good salesman.
I blame the people as well who bought it, or the person who bought it.
Some fucking moron somewhere in the world parted with $18,300. That's a lot of money to buy something that does not exist.
So this sculpture, in inverted commas, was it initially pegged to sell for between 6,000 and 9,000 euros, but it ultimately sold for 15,000 euros. So that's just over 18,000 US dollars. So far, it's an unnamed buyer, but who would actually, I think this is someone who has a lot of money and actually just wants to own it as just to take the piss out of it at dinner. So just, all they get,
this person can't be smart. You know, they really, you do so many more powerful and positive things for the world with $18,000. They better hope this person, whoever they are, they better hope that their name is never revealed, because they deserve any amount of scorn that comes to them.
What's the dollar nowadays? 15 rand.
Yeah. So do a quick calculation there. 18,300 multiplied by 15.
274,500 rands. Oh my God. Oh, that's what someone bought. So because there isn't anything physical that you can buy, the buyer simply got a stamped certificate for the payment, proving that, this nothing belongs to them now. The artist Salvatore instructs that the sculpture will need to be displayed very particularly in an unobstructed area that is 5 feet by 5 feet. And he says, you know, he's very, very happy that it will be displayed in this private home, and it, you know, it may be displayed in any light since it's not there.
Displayed.
It can be. I would like to hope. I would like to really, really hope that next month another story comes up that this was all one big prank, and it's actually Johnny Knoxville coming back with Jackass 7 or whatever Jackass they're on now, because I refuse to believe that this is real.
Yeah, it's got to be. Then maybe someone will do a big ta-da. We got you. We fooled you. You moron. I hope that happens. Anyway.
Yeah, but the Salvatore's a real artist, and he sold real art before, and now here we are.
Good for him. If you are clever enough to be able to make money out of other people's bullshit, and I mean, there could be an argument. You know, we're being dismissive of him. But there is an argument that, like, when you buy a Bitcoin, what are you actually buying?
Mm.
You know, NFTs, these non-fungible tokens, these things, some of them, you can't actually have the thing. You can buy a share of something or a share in an idea. It's kind of when you start a business, and let's say you're a 50% shareholder in a business, but it's only at the idea stage, you're actually buying nothing. So maybe this guy is the future of art. Let's not consider him to be a moron. The person who bought it obviously needs their head read, but you don't actually own a Bitcoin when you buy a Bitcoin, do you?
Gareth, you can't compare it to a business, though. A business, you might be buying into nothing initially, but you know that over time it will either prove to be a success or not.
How do we know that this sculpture of nothing, this invisible thing which doesn't exist, how do we know that that won't accumulate value over time, just as other ideas have? It's an idea. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate.
No,
There may be.
You're really going there, actually, with this.
I think it's ridiculous. I've already stated my case in respect of how I feel about it. But if I have to look at it from a, you know, an objective point of view and try to see the other person's point of view and try to understand why they would spend money on this, you never know where value accumulates. And just because he's created this bullshit piece of art and in his mind it exists, there's a lot that people have put money into that's much dumber than that. And sometimes it's come back for them.
But there isn't like a slab of concrete, perhaps, that he says this nothing is on. And maybe the value of the concrete will accumulate. There's nothing. Yeah. Space, 5 feet by 5 feet.
No,
we live in a ridiculous world. I'm just done with this world.
Say it's stupid. Anyway. Apparently a Danish journalist who was busy researching a story. Now, she's a serious journalist. We're meant to believe she's a serious journalist, and I don't know who this person is, so they may be. But she said that she wanted to go and do an article. She wanted to do a piece on swingers clubs and how swingers clubs work and how people behave in swingers clubs and what goes down and how it is. And she wanted to be experiential about it. So she actually went to a swingers club and had sex during the interview that she was doing for the segment on the swingers club. Now, that is someone who's devoted to the job, right? That is someone who's really into her journalism.
She's the employee of the year, damn it. Good for her.
Yeah.
No, she is quite frank about it, though. Her name is Louise Fisher. She's 26 years old and works for a broadcast platform in Denmark. And she was covering the swingers club in Copenhagen that was opening. So the initial brief was just profiling this place that is opening now after COVID-19 and lockdown restrictions have been lifted. And she thought, I'm 26 years old. I don't have a boyfriend. Screw it. What do I have to lose? And look, we're now talking about her on the other side of the world. So it actually worked for her.
I don't know that you need to, like, if you want to talk about something, you don't have to have experienced it every time. You are able to. For example, I don't have to jump off a building to know that it's going to be an uncomfortable end. I don't have to run through broken glass and barbed wire to know that that's going to hurt me. There's some things that you perhaps don't have to have experience of in order to talk about authentically and in an authoritative way. And I'm sick of these people who say, for example, unless you have had the same lived experience as I have, you can't comment on things. That's nonsense, because everyone's experience is so completely different that even if you and I did exactly the same thing, let's say we both had 7 drinks in a row tonight at 7 o'clock. All right. We both took exactly the same alcohol. We had 7 drinks in a row. We would both have a very different experience of it. You might hate it. You might start throwing up. I might be fine. You don't know. It doesn't matter what your lived experience is in these particular situations. And to go to a swingers club and have to have sex in order to, it's really a publicity stunt. That's what it is. Mm. It's not actually going to give her any insights that an observer who doesn't partake might not have. I mean, does the observer always have to be part of the experiment?
And I know that's what,
that's what relativity tells us, but you don't, in order to know that it is cold in Antarctica, do you have to go to Antarctica?
Good point.
Some people would say yes, because then you can explain it with much more experience and color, and your understanding will be so much more visceral. And yes, of course, but I think it would be fairly obvious for me to say Antarctica is cold. And if you say to me, oh, well, you haven't been there, you don't know. I can say, well, here's the temperature in Antarctica right now. It seems kind of, you know, objectively true.
Plain and simple. Yeah. She anyway, says most of the.
Did she enjoy it? Is she going to go back?
Yeah, she says most of the feedback that she received from this piece have been positive. Some people just thought she was just being brave and cool. And then others think that she crossed the line in journalism. But she personally says that she thinks that it's very cool when reporters try to make the stories in a different way. But to actually like have the body slapping and things, you can, no, thank you. Just, I don't want to hear that. And I don't want to be particularly her colleague when she comes back after that.
To each their own. I would not necessarily, like if you go into a drug cartel to report on what they're doing, right? You're going to discover how the drug cartel works. Does that mean if you're called upon to kill someone, who's in a rival gang, that you're going to have to do it just so you can tell your story? I think not. I think that's probably a bad idea. Yeah, I think that's a bad idea. Just a thought. But yeah, you know, I might be wrong. But I don't think it's necessary to go and kill someone just so you can have a story.
Good point.
Anyway, let's get to Phil, because I've got lots to talk to him about. So while you're getting him on the line, Sia, let me just quickly tell the story. How's it, Phil?
Morning. How's it, guys?
Good morning.
It's nice and warm in Ermelo. You sent me an update. Yeah. Everybody on the screen, nice balmy 0 degrees in Ermelo. Shit, lucky to be you, huh?
Yeah, I'm sure we're gonna probably hit the minuses over the weekend, but yeah, I mean, today we're still on the zero. Yeah, well,
they do say today is probably the coldest in like the northern parts of South Africa and the east where you are. They say today's the coldest day of winter so far, so get ready Get ready to be standing near heaters and trying to get some rays of the sun on you today at some point. All right. So last weekend, I went to the Kruger National Park with the family. So we all went in different cars because people left at different times. And me and my sister and her boyfriend and our family friend whose mom was in another car and whose brother was in another car, we all went in a car that Phil organized for us. Now, I said to Phil, listen, I don't mind what you find for me, you decide, because you've been to the Kruger Park a number of times. What's the best car to go in? And I didn't have any expectations, eh? I thought, you know what, this will be, whatever it is, it'll be nice. Mm-hmm. Well, I collected this car. Let me just show you. I'm going to actually put some pictures up here as well. I collected this V-Class Mercedes. Now, I've always thought that these are like soccer mom vans. I mean, that's a fair thing to call it, right, Phil? Yeah. You could call it a soccer mom's van, right?
It falls under the category. It's one option.
This is one of the most incredible things I have ever been in. And I'm not exaggerating that, because when you travel on land, you realize that, especially if you're going to do a road trip, and this is a good 4 hours to Mpumalanga and to the Kruger Park gate. So I thought, it'll be fun. We'll take a little drive and we'll be in reasonable comfort because there's space in this car. Well, space is only the first part of it. These things are so full of creature comforts. So I drove all the way there and all the way back. But I also sat in the back during the time we were in the park. And you could put your feet up, Sia. You can stretch yourself out. Now, we made a bit of a joke of this because we decided we were going to turn it into like a sitting room effectively. So I'm going to show you some pictures of what we did in the back there. We put down a Persian carpet. Okay. This is not a joke.
What?
Put down a little Persian carpet. If I'd had time, I would have gone and bought one of those, those chandeliers that you can, with a suction, put onto the sunroof. This thing
Wait, how big is this thing?
Huge. You've got two sunroofs at the back. I'm going to show you a picture now. Just give me a second. I'm going to load these pictures. So we decided we were going to take the piss a little bit and really kit it out like it was some kind of sitting room. You've got, what else have I, in the front, let me just start with the front. So the driving experience is incredible because you're in the cockpit of any really good Mercedes, and you know what those are like. They have everything. It's all Bluetooth is connected. There's a screen there, temperature controlled. You've got seat warmers, but you also see I've got seat coolers. So you know how, and the only other car I've ever been in that had a seat cooler where it blows cold air through the little holes in the seat. Yes, that's how luxurious this is. The only time I've ever driven a car that had that before this was a Bentley. That's the level of luxury we're talking about here.
Ooh, this is fancy.
Nice.
Oh, yes. So you get in the driver's seat, and obviously you can arrange everything around you. You've got your cup holders, and there's even a cup holder, by the way, that if you've got coffee will keep it warm. And you press another button.
Oh, no, car, no.
Yeah. It'll keep the coffee warm. But if you press the button again, it will cool something else. So if you've got a bottle of water or something, it'll make it cold. Oh, yes. I'm not joking. This is unbelievable. I've never seen this in a car before. And maybe for many people who are listening to this now, that's been happening for a long time. For me, this was novel. I'd never seen any of this before. The front of the car, because it's such a big car, I mean, it's long. You've got so much space. The people at the back might not be able to hear you. So there's this thing that it does where it actually connects. You can speak like I'm speaking to you now, and it's got a little microphone that then bounces the sound.
No, it does not.
So the people in the back can hear you. Oh, yes. Not a word of a lie.
I am going to look at these cars in such a different new way.
I thought it was just a van that a soccer mom would drive around. I had no idea that it was this cool. I'm blown away. And Phil, I mean, for you, obviously, this is not a surprise. You've been in these cars, you sell these cars, you know them well. But let me just show you a couple of pictures quickly while we're getting ready. So this one was also red. And I was a little bit nervous because I heard that some of the animals don't necessarily like a red car. But let me show you this quickly. Can you see that? Hang on. I don't know why this picture is
not yet.
No, it's not loading. Hang on. Let me just see if I can find this. So here's my sister and our friend in the back with their laptops. Look at all that space. They've got a table in front of them. We put a little vase with flowers there. No, seriously. Look at my sister. My sister's got the internet running. So she was basically, look at all those windows. Now, if you're going to the Kruger Park, you want to be able to see out of the car, right?
Wow.
And you've got basically unimpeded vision in every direction. You've got unbelievable light and visibility. And you've got air conditioning running the whole time. So it's perfectly climate controlled too. I mean, it's just
comfortable. I'm just taking a peek at the seats there.
Seats are great. So we put.
So you still have the luxury of a Mercedes Benz that you're used to.
So just to mess with people, we also put scatter cushions and a throw on the back seats. So it's just like over the top to make it extra fun. But I mean, can you tell how magnificent this thing is? How luxurious it is?
Gareth, and on the picture too. Your seat configuration, was it two seats in front and then two and then like three seats in the back?
Those two seats that they were in are at the back of it. And then the other two seats in the back are facing them so that you're almost sitting in, as I said, like in a sitting room. And they've got a little table between them, which you could see they put the laptops and things on. But it's unreal. I mean, and you can actually turn those seats around so that it's more like auditorium seating.
The seat configuration work when it was like, like this,
Yes. Yes, it did. Yeah. Okay. It was great. It was terrific. Right. You had two people looking because what we did is we took the kids. When we were in the park, we decided to like be good uncles and aunts and things. And so we took the kids and they loved it. I mean, they were absolutely in love with this car. They were climbing around in the back there. There's so much space. It's safe. They can sit down in the seats that are facing the opposite way and watch what's happening through the back window. It's amazing. It's an amazing, amazing vehicle. I was just blown away. So Phil, tell me the specs of this thing, because obviously I'm not the car expert, and there are going to be people listening to this now who want to know exactly what it is.
Yes, well, sure. I mean, so you get like quite a few models. I mean, the entry level starts at the V200, which is your entry level. Some of you guys would also know the more familiar bus, which is called the Vito, which is more of a down spec one than the V class. I mean, it comes with cloth sheets and way little more creature comforts and so forth. Your entry level V200 already starts being in the luxury market of the bus, you know, and then it goes all the way up to your V300 exclusive or avant-garde, and I suppose that's the one that we organized for you, which is a double range. I can see from the pictures, I mean, it's got the wooden inserts on the side and so forth.
So the
price then varies from about $1 million, your entry level, and it goes up to about, I think the one you were driving is around about 1.6, 1.7, around about there. Yeah.
Right. Okay, let me show you what it looks like on the outside, because that's what a lot of people are asking as well. So this one, and by the way, it was very easy to drive. I've never driven a bus or a combi or a van before, but I was a little bit nervous, but it was easy as hell to drive.
I was going to ask that.
That's what it looks like.
That's
from the
like a cherry red.
Yeah.
Nice.
No, it's awesome. Very nice. It's
yeah. What I wanted to find out, Gareth, is does it feel clunky? Does it feel like you're driving a big car?
No. And the other thing about it that I liked is there's so much storage space. Like at the back, they've got a boot, which is obviously, you know, we had luggage because we were staying in the park for 3 nights and we were taking food and stuff as well because it's self-catering. And there was so much room. There was space behind the seats, the driver's seats, and there was space in the boots as well. And there's a little shelf on the back. So if you are a soccer mom who's going to do the grocery
shopping, how big is this car?
It's huge. I mean, so let me just quickly show you this. Here's the back seat area again. Let me just give you an idea of what it looks like. This is when we put the throw and the scatter cushions and some champagne just to fuck with everybody, you know. I wanted it to. You can see the Persian carpets on the floor in the middle there. But honestly, it's just... Like, Phil, this is a spectacular thing. And if you'd said to me at any time before, even when you told me about this one now, you know, take this car, I would, what a horrible thing to drive. It's one of my favorite cars that I've ever been in. And I've been in sports cars, in real luxury sedans. This thing is amazing. Awesome. And to have that much space, it's really just such a win for a road trip or a holiday.
Oh, wonderful. Now I'm happy you liked it. Yes, I'm sure. I mean, especially for Kruger Park, I mean, what we sometimes do, which is probably illegal, is we open the doors because, I mean, you probably see that you can't open the windows on the back.
Stia's getting nervous. Well, yeah, you don't want a hyena jumping in with you, do you?
Exactly. No, you probably got some good consumption as well. I don't know if you paid attention to it.
Yeah, the fuel consumption, like any Mercedes, you've got different settings. And if you put it on economy, on eco, you know, there's the E setting, then it really uses, I mean, this one's diesel and it used, we've made it into the park and doing all the driving around, game viewing stuff. I only filled up on the morning that we left, and we still had about a quarter of a tank. So I was being careful.
Sweet.
Got back to Joburg, and we had half a tank left. So it's phenomenally economical. It really is. It's very good.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Such a great car. So who buys these?
It's a difficult question. I mean, we also thought it's going to be one specific type of system, but now it's all over. You get them even from young families with little babies, and it goes all the way up to people that would like to transport executives and people from the airport back to the hotel.
Because I was thinking like VIP transfers and things. This thing's amazing, right?
Correct. Yeah.
The other thing is that because I'd never driven one before, and because I wasn't looking for them, I never saw them on the road. Now I'm seeing them everywhere. They're quite a lot around, and they are like the smartest taxis you can find, right? I mean, if you if you were driving a taxi, this would be the one to drive.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
See, how's the
sound? I see some people are commenting on the sound. Is everything okay on your side?
Yeah, there was an echo. Yeah, it's gone now.
If you just sit further forward. Yeah, if you sit, the further you sit back, the less it works. But yeah, listen, Phil, just an amazing car. And I would say to anybody who's looking for, especially if you have more than two children, and it almost, whatever happens in the back doesn't even matter if you're the driver. You just let them go wild because they're safe in there and there's enough space for them. And it's just incredible. I mean, like whether you're in the business of transporting people around, whether it's kids, whether it's a car that you need to put people in for trips or whatever. This is just the most awesome car. So I wanted to bring you on this week before I forgot all of this. But yeah, a really awesome experience. Thanks, Phil.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed it, Gareth. Nice.
You want to say hi to George quickly because we're bringing George on?
Hey, Phil.
Morning, George. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I've been listening. I love the old Vito, but this thing seems incredible. It's all it needs now is an electric engine.
Yes, yeah, and then you can tell. Is the electric version coming?
Yes, you can go and check. It's called the EQV, mm-hmm. which is going to be the electric side of the V-Class. Yeah, so looking forward to that as well. Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably going to be launched in Germany around about next year, and then probably take a while after that to get to South Africa, but it's coming. Yeah, looking forward to that one as well.
All right, Phil, we'll have a lucky weekend and we'll talk to you again in the next weeks. Cool, man. Cheers.
Enjoy it. Cheers. Bye-bye.
George, I love this feature where you can say something in the driver's seat and the people at the back hear you, like it amplifies you.
Yeah. Is that part of the sound system? Is it just the acoustic sound system?
Wow. And by the way, the sound system's amazing. I mean, on any good road trip, you need good music, right? So we were playing music half the way and talking a lot of the time, and it was just fantastic. And as you could see, my sister and my cousin, they're basically our cousins, they were busy in the back there doing work, and they could just get on it. And both of them said that usually in a car, they would get car sick doing that, but this thing's so smooth. And they were so comfortable that they didn't even get car sick. So it's like taking your office on the road. So George, I saw you are busy putting out some content about your electric Jag. Very, very nice. Saw that yesterday.
I don't think I'll ever go back to a fossil fuel or an internal combustion engine vehicle. It's just, you know, when you drive this car every day, you feel almost in a meditative state if you switch off all the music and all the sound.
Well, it's so quiet, right?
It's so quiet. It's, you know, I've been driving them for a while, and OEMs have given them to me for a week at a time, and it's, you know, you get so much information coming at you when you get the car for a short period of time. I mean, like you probably experienced in the V-Class, is there's just so much to take in that it almost overwhelms your brain. But when you start to spend every day with the car, and you get used to its features, suddenly a lot of things disappear into the background and you can enjoy the thing.
Well, I mean, it's like that with any car. And I'll never forget the first time that I bought a convertible, and it was the most exciting thing in the world. And it lasted for a long time. It lasted longer than I thought it would, like a couple of months, where it was still a thrill to put the roof down and that kind of stuff, you know. But eventually that just becomes, it's your car. So it's like a wheelbarrow. You just eventually, you know, you get used to it. It's also the same. I mean, in relationships, a lot of people say that they, you know, are deeply in love for the first couple of years. And then later on, you just get used to each other, which is for some people a bit sad, but it's the reality in many relationships. So I think the same happens with a car. And if you're still getting a kick out of it now, that's a really good sign.
Well, I mean, up to this vehicle, cars were just functional for me. You know, whereas I'm hoping the novelty doesn't wear off too quickly, but it's an incredible car to drive. The instantaneous torque, the silence. You can choose to have noise or music, or you can choose to have silence. You don't.
Well, that engine is so quiet. It's so, that to me is whenever I've been in an electric vehicle, I just love the fact that it just hums. It purrs along. It doesn't make any, there's none of that. And, you know, I've been driving diesel cars lately, and when you start them, it does feel like a bit of a tractor when they start up.
Well, when I had my Land Rover, when I got up to a boom gate that I had to talk to the security for, I had to actually switch the car off.
To shout at them, yeah.
When you open the window, the engine noise is just too much. So, or when you push an intercom out your window, has it ever been noisy to turn the car off? Well, I had to. Yeah. No, I don't have to do that.
No, it's awesome. All right. So what's on your agenda for the day?
Well, there is an interesting phenomenon that I didn't see until probably a week or two ago, and that is SUVs are killing most other category of car. SUVs are growing unbelievably all around the world, including South Africa. But the trouble with SUVs is because they're so big and heavy and often not very aerodynamic, they are the biggest source of carbon emissions out of most car categories. SUVs even trump in terms of the volume in the world, not a single SUV. All the SUVs put together in the world emit about 544 megatons of CO2.
Wow. So
whereas the heavy car industry...
If you drive an SUV, you're an environmental terrorist. Is that what you're trying to tell us?
I didn't realize that SUVs are this heavy with carbon dioxide and monoxide. So it is, it even eclipses the aviation industry if you added all of the SUVs together.
Really? In terms
of carbon emissions. The aviation industry puts out about 233 megatons of CO2. And SUVs are second in the world to only power plants like power stations.
Jesus, that's heavy. That's some very heavy going. All right. So are you saying to us that we shouldn't be driving these?
No, I mean, I think it's not something
Have you become an environmentalist, George?
Well, no, I think I've always been, it's in the back of my mind, but I'm not going to go, you know, don't make anything a religion. But it's important. It's very important. You know, we have to do something about it, but we can't.
Let's just remember, for all those people like you, George, who are feeling superior because you drive an electric car and you think that you're not damaging the environment, let's just not forget all of the coal that we require to burn in order to recharge your batteries.
You know? George did not say he felt superior to us. He was stating his claim. That's all.
Exactly, and I'm trying to address that with the solar panels on the roof here. No, you can't. I mean, we can't switch overnight. It's just impossible. If all the coal powered stations went away, it would cause some serious chaos. Industries wouldn't be able to work. But SUVs are. I just didn't realize. I mean, look at the Kardashians. All they drive is SUVs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think SUVs are for many people, it's the pinnacle car, right? You have this interesting kind of overlap between family utility vehicle and something that's quite luxurious and that's quite sporty and fun to drive. So I think for many people, it fulfills a whole lot of their requirements.
It does, and it's not going to go away anytime soon, but I would imagine and predict that the world's OEMs are going to focus on the electric SUV. I mean, you already got the Ford, I think it's the F-150 electric pickup truck in America. Mm-hmm. So, and South Africa is a very big Bucky nation. Buckies are a big thing here. SUVs as well, but SUVs more so all over the rest of the world. And then Pope Francis is going to get his first electric Pope mobile.
I thought it always was an electric because it looks like a stupid little thing. I thought you could probably power that with a.
I knew you were going to go after its looks.
You could power that with like 3 Duracell batteries that you buy at Checkers.
Well, he's going so slow.
Even Duracell is a little too nice. You know those Fong Kong batteries.
Oh yeah, the ones that you buy like 100 in a pack, those ones.
That come with like the cheap toys that you buy for your nieces or nephew.
I'm not sure you can push that thing forward with the amount of glass he's got in that.
Actually, I used to think it was a wind-up, or what was it called? A pullback.
Oh, one of those things.
Yes.
Or it had an actual, like a thing at the back that you twist it up and then the spring would give it enough energy to
just let it go.
Well, remember the Noddy car with the big, that twisty thing on the back.
Exactly.
Yes.
I thought the Pope Mobile was like that too. So you're telling me it's actually been an ICE vehicle now. They're going electric.
Another guy. Surprise. So,
you'll have an EV in 2022 and they're busy building this thing now. It's called an Ocean SUV. Right.
I'm so excited.
520,000 Rand for your wind up car.
Oh, it's so nice. Well done, the Pope.
And then there has been some research done, you know, in none other than the US of A by a company. What is this company's name? I can't recall it now. But this piece of research detects early dementia by monitoring your driving behavior.
God, please, can we put Joe Biden in that car immediately?
So they're busy. They're busy tracking 3,000 drivers aged 65 to 79 voluntarily, and they've been the cars have been fitted with you know, gadgets and sensors and stuff. And up to now, they are confident that they can predict mild cognitive impairment and dementia with 88% accuracy by monitoring driving behavior.
Well, that would be very, very helpful, because I've often thought that, you know, there are certain people who are very lucid at an advanced age. There are people who are in their 90s and are perfectly okay to drive. And then there are other people who are in their 60s and really should not be allowed to drive. And even people, obviously, much younger. But if these cars, if this research can figure out definitively whether you're in a state to drive, I think that's terrific. I mean, they've already, you know, you've got these cars that won't start. And if you blow into the breathalyzer and you've got even a drop of alcohol in your breath, then it won't allow you to drive. So the more we can remove dangerous or irresponsible people from the roads, the better. And that goes for the demented as well.
I mean, dementia is a problem, you know, and Alzheimer's. Right. I mean, you can't be operating a vehicle at speed. With those things.
And you certainly can't be president of the United States with your the nuclear codes in your possession if you're a demented old man as well. So someone has to test out the same research on Joe Biden. Please, can we just do that?
Well, I mean, they probably can, because he drives, apparently. US presidents are not allowed to drive. He likes driving.
Oh, yeah. But there was this embarrassing picture of him in some electric vehicle the other day, but it had two steering wheels. So he was sitting at the one steering wheel and the actual driver was at the other one. So it was like a publicity shot. And clearly they won't allow him to drive because he'll just drive straight off the edge of something or into something.
Talking about driving.
Didn't he break his leg like chasing the dog around the yard or something? The guy he's really, really old and very fragile.
Well, they shouldn't be letting him drive. Maybe they put some of those sensors in Joe Biden's car. Talking about driving off the edge of stuff, in St. Louis, which is in the state of Missouri.
Mm-hmm. St. Louis.
St. Louis, yes. And this driver drove off the edge of the road, tumbled, hit a tree,
yeah,
went over end, so the car tumbled over, in an embankment, hit a wrought iron fence, and then catapulted through the air and through the roof of a house and landed at the foot end of somebody's bed while they were sleeping.
Oh, wow. That's a hell of a way to wake up.
Oof, that's annoying.
Yeah, and just a little. Yeah.
Apparently.
A bit of an inconvenience.
Cars driving in houses and sitting in living rooms or going through roofs is not an uncommon thing.
I would be very, very angry if I woke up one morning and there was a car at the end of my bed. Not to mention uncomfortable and in this cold weather, probably freezing as well. That's not good.
Exactly.
So what happened? Exactly. What happened to this person? Did they arrest them?
Well, I don't know. Nobody died. This person is very, very lucky, and I'll post a link so you can see the image of this guy in the roof of this house. It's like, how do you even get this right?
That is so silly. We have such a long way to go for this.
Only happens in America.
I'm surprised it's actually not Florida or something this time around.
You love Florida, Sia. And then finally, car jamming theft. Be careful. Check out what your insurance policy says, because sometimes you may not get paid out if your car gets car jammed. Because often, insurance, and I'm not talking about your car getting stolen. I'm talking about things being stolen from inside your car. Because if you leave the car open and something gets stolen, insurance may just not pay out. And while you might not think that it's right or it's appropriate, it is your responsibility to make sure your car is locked. So if it gets jammed and stuff gets stolen out, your insurance may not pay you out for the stuff that was stolen.
Ugh. It's frustrating that we have to think about this. And there's just one always has this sense of paranoia every time you now get out of your car.
Well, just when you push the don't walk away from the car and push the button and expect it to be locked. You know, make sure the car is locked, and before you walk away from it, check the door. You know, I think as South Africans, we've got this habit of we get out the car, we slam the door on the way walking out of the car, we push the button, we watch the indicators go, and we expect the car to be locked, and it might not be locked because they could have jammed it.
So you're not saying that insurance companies pick this up and they deem it what, something like negligence, and then they don't pay out?
Well, what the insurance companies do often is they look for evidence of break-in. They look, so if you say that something got stolen out of the car and you want to put in a claim, they're going to look for the evidence of the car actually being broken into. And in the case of car jamming, there's no evidence of the car being broken into. So you could be at risk. I'm not saying all insurance contracts are like this, but you could be at risk. Check out your insurance company's policy. And make sure that you lock your car. Check the door before you walk away from it.
It's crazy that we now have to factor this in.
Exactly. And I think we've lost Gareth, and I'm done.
And you're done just like that. No, it's fine. It seems like we've lost Gareth out of a connection thing. But George, thank you so much. It's good at least that we have you back this week and you did yourself justice. We weren't going to...
You didn't do too bad a job.
George, no. But let's call it a day there, not just a day. Let's call it a week. Thank you so much for having us on this morning. This has been the Friday edition of the Gareth Cliff Show. George, we'll chat to you next week. But as always, there's Autos Central. You can go onto our website or the app and catch up on full episodes of Autos Central whenever you wish. So you don't just have to wait for Friday to listen to George. But other than that, the rest of the team, Leanne, Gareth, and myself will be back on Monday morning. Have an awesome, awesome weekend. This has been the Gareth Cliff Show. CliffCentral.com.